Oh, for goodness sakes. Really? Whenever we go live, Danny's freaking internet blows up. Yeah, you were perfectly okay until you
hit the go live button. You were just fine 5 minutes ago.
You were fine until you hit go live. I don't know what's... Yeah, I don't know what's going on. How much bandwidth it's eating or streaming or if you've got like something going on in the background, but...
We're going to have serious conversations with my connection or with Restream. Am I good now?
Yeah, you're better now.
We can hear you. You're just fuzzy. Now you're better. Now you're clear.
Because she hasn't moved in about 10 seconds. It's finally caught up.
God. Well, that's annoying.
Yeah, I think it's because you, I mean, when we were talking off camera, it was perfectly fine. Then you literally, as soon as you hit the intro thing for us, it just went, and we're like, and we're off again. So we'll see. Let's see if it gets better or stays better.
Did the intro
don't move
work?
So much.
Yeah.
Because that works hard on that one. Okay, hold on. Wait, is this better? Wait, no.
We'll see. Give it a couple of seconds and we'll see what happens.
We can hear you.
Just your fuzzy is on. Like your face is fuzzy, blurry.
That's annoying because I have a expensive camera and it's not worth shit if I'm fuzzy.
Yeah, it's okay. Welcome to the internet. Welcome to the internet. 1997 call. They want to dial up back.
Yeah, my electrons do need greasing. Jesus. Yeah, totally. Right. Anyway, welcome back to what the fuck did I just read? Tech Sales and Marketing Edition 2.0.
I know. I'm loving this. Actually, it says this is I'm sitting in one is in New York City. Sitting in a white privileged hotel room.
What's going on in New York City? How are you doing, Maria? How are you feeling? Let's break it down.
Maria, go for it. You go first.
I'm feeling a lot better than I did yesterday and Monday, that's for sure. Yesterday, I laid in bed all day, but I did some work, but a lot of laying in bed. I had strep throat, but feeling better now.
Good.
Good.
I'm terrorizing New York. We had a rather fantastic meeting yesterday with ForgePoint, the folks, one of the big investment organizations. So caught up with them, a bunch of their like portfolio orgs, and then a whole bunch of like just some really, really good stuff about what's going on in the industry. How's it going on the CISO side? How are organizations going? How are investments going? All that kind of good stuff. So it's actually really, really nice. We didn't get finished last night until about 9-10 o'clock. And then went hunting around for a speakeasy at Grand Central Station, managed to break in and drank things with umbrellas, which was good and scary until you can figure out whether I got back to this place and I'm like, where am I staying? It's one of those evenings.
Oh yeah, I need one of those evenings. That's actually going to happen soon, probably in a couple weeks at Cyber Marketing Con. I'm pretty excited. No. All right, cool. Well, this is exciting. We have a lot to unpack here. A little bit of housekeeping before we kick it off. For those who are new to the show, this is how it runs. We basically break something down, we break it back up, and then we way into the happy world of cybersecurity. However, today we have some special topics to talk about. We won't be breaking down a message today because we have to talk about pessimism. We have to talk about the industry. We have to talk about Q1 and Q2 panic. We have a lot to uncover. So how about we kick it off? This conversation actually was inspired by a post that I saw yesterday. I won't bring it up on screen, but it was a spicy post. It was a disgruntled post by somebody in the industry who seems to have trouble breaking in. However, what I saw in this post was a lot of finger pointing and blaming of vendors, blaming of cybersecurity practitioners, blaming of management, blaming of organizations. I can't even say it all in one sentence without losing my breath. Maria, Chris, you reviewed that specific, thread. Let's unravel it a little bit. Let's break it down. So the first thing that struck me was the fact that a lot of people were blaming the vendors for the issues in the industry, over promising, under delivering, selling snake oil, you know, the fact that tools don't work. Tell me how that specific thread and that specific blame game struck you.
I mean, there's always an element of truth, no two ways about it. I mean, let's just start with the easy one. The simple fact is, a couple of years ago, there was a snake oil sales booth at, I think it was either RSA or Black Hat. I can't remember which one it was at. It might have been at both, actually. You know, there is always a grain of truth in that one. And I think it's, you know, you look at it and you will always find, unfortunately, vendors who do overpromise and underdeliver. I mean, you're talking to somebody who stood on stage a number of times and talked about accountability and talked about, you know, okay, when you're going to tell me you're going to protect me, well, A, stop lying because you can't. But more often than not, help me understand what you can do and stop selling me, you know, vaporware that you haven't finished coding yet. So there is a level of cynicism around that. Very, very honestly as well, I would also turn around and say, within our own industry, we've forgotten the basics in many cases. Otherwise, we wouldn't have quite so much bloody ransomware. Otherwise, you know, patching would actually be effective and work and do what it should do on the box, as well as leadership would actually understand what they need to do and how they need to fix things. So there's definitely grains of truth in that. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Is it fair to blame everybody? Absolutely not, because there are good people out there. But there's also a lot that I would say need to be held more accountable. That's kind of like a 60,000 foot view.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a few things, Danny. One of the things when I read it this, I think I read it this morning. You're right. There was a lot of finger pointing and, but no recommendations for how to fix it. Right. It was just like a problem with no solution or recommendation to fix it. That was the first thing. The second thing is, there's definitely a lot of, there is overselling and underdelivering. That's going to happen no matter what happens. That's just always going to happen, unfortunately, to some extent. And also, we're in a technology industry. A lot of the stuff we're using is technology. And guess what? The shit breaks. It does. Mm-hmm. Stuff happens. And things happen. And it is on the providers then to kind of come clean as to what happened and what the fixes are. And I don't think enough people do that. I think it's just kind of like they throw a banner up and then we're just left to waffle. Go ahead.
Here's one thing on that one, though, which is I think this is where I think the industry has got it completely wrong, which is the one size fits all.
There is no such thing.
Well, I mean, then that's it. I think that's, you know, when you walk in and say, hey, I've got a widget, you know, here's my widget, and this is going to work for every single person. Well, it doesn't. Every single person is different. You know, I mean, if you even take the phone, you go look at everybody's phone, everybody has customized their phone their way. They started off with a vanilla system, you know, an iPhone is an iPhone, you hand an iPhone and you do what you want to it. That's great. But if you sell this to me as a tool and its only function is A, B, and C, and I can't do anything else with it, it won't work for most people. And I think that's what we've done in security. And too many times we've gone in there and said, here is an endpoint solution, and this is how you install it. And most companies are like, well, shit, that ain't going to work because I've got A, B, C, and D that does this. I've got this over here. And we're all different. So I think that's part of the problem is the approach has been too often. And I think some of it comes down to when you are going for venture money. And I think that's, you know, there's a conversation yesterday on this one. You know, when you think about it, if you have to sell a product to 1,000 customers to get your, you know, to get your valuation or that shenanigans, you don't want to sell, and you sure as hell don't want to tell the VCs that you want to sell 1,000 customized solutions because they'll freak out and they'll never get any money. But in reality, that's what you're doing.
That's exactly what you're doing. And go ahead, Danny.
No, I don't want to derail your train of thought there. So please, by all means, continue.
Well, that goes back to there was a part of the chain in that particular post about the vendors and they can't be selling enough because they're laying everybody off and so on and so forth. And that kind of ties back to that, right? Because they have to staff up, hire a bunch of sellers to go sell a bunch of stuff so they can chase their funding. And then,
about it. Think of where we're at now.
Exactly.
Think of where we're at now. So we're in, what, 2023, about to hit 24. We've hit reality again. And this was actually a really good part of the conversation yesterday, is when we hit 2019, 2020, and there was a level of reality. Then for 2 years, our industry went stupid. You know, valuations went through the roofs, all the other stuff, shares, slides, everything else just went on this ludicrous trajectory up to like here or something. And then everybody got a little bit of dose of reality, and all of a sudden it's come back down to where we should be here. So all of this up here, everybody staffed up, everybody went nuts. Everybody, there were so many people hiring so that other companies couldn't hire them. I mean, it was ridiculous. And so now the reality is cashing its check in, those companies are suddenly going, hang on, we can't sustain that level of growth because it just can't. We can't come up with a valuation that we thought we're at. We're not going to do public or any of this other stuff. So yeah, they're having to look at the bottom lines and go, hang on, we're feeding 5,000 mouths when 3 years ago we were feeding 2,000, and 2,000 is sustainable. 5,000, given the current, you know, market, is absolutely not. So yeah, people, it sucks. And that's through almost all walks of life. Service industry still needs more people. But most walks of life have had a bit of a reality check.
Yeah, God, you just distilled that real nice.
I mean, but that's what it is. I mean, yeah, that's what it is. You know, Danny, you okay?
Am I still on?
You're still fuzzy. Yeah,
you're on. You're on.
I'm gonna get you sorted. Yeah.
This is.
Danny. No,
maybe it's not.
Danny, whatever the heck you were, I've lost bits of you again. I'm getting some audio and no video.
We have an idea for a Hanukkah gift for Danny, Chris.
No shit, better internet.
Maybe it's time to.
Danny, are you on wireless or wired? And if anybody else is on it, kick them off.
Yeah.
All right, well, Danny's playing. Yeah, it's yes. Yeah, I know. It's always their internet issues on this one. All right, who's having conversations? I saw somebody. Good morning, new here. Oh, well, now it's disappeared. New here. Josh Smith is new. Hey, Josh. At the end, the end of ZERP changed a lot. Will you please not use acronyms? I don't have a fucking clue what you're talking about. What the hell is ZERP? I was like, ZERG? Or are we talking like, God help us.
I can pull up and cover for Danny a little bit while she figures out her internet stuff.
Yes.
So why don't we pivot? Like, she was talking about the post that we read, essentially, for those listening. There was a lot of, like she said, pessimism, pointing fingers, and people were responding to the pessimism with options for alternatives or different approaches that could be taken, or fixes for what his issues or this individual's issues were. And there was, this person wasn't having it. So Chris, I guess, what do you think are the main sources of pessimism within the industry, and what can we do about it? I covered for you, Danny.
Yeah.
God, I'm even worse now.
Am I? So let's hit this. So I don't want to, we got to figure this one off offline, to be honest. So let's go back to what we're talking about. So I think there's a couple of things. Firstly, let's face it. When anybody from the vendor and the sales side of things hits somebody in our industry who is going to be signing the checkbook, let's face it, that person's been in this industry for an extended period of time. So those rose-colored spectacles that most folks come in with, going, oh, I want to be a pen tester, or I want to be a red teamer, or no, I mean, that the rose-colored spectacles have probably already been stripped off. Let's just put this one in case. Secondly, reality of our industry over the last several years has had to align more effectively with the business. You know, for a long, long time, we were able to spend and spend and spend, which wasn't the right way of doing it. But now, especially when you get to leadership levels, I now have to focus more on the business side of things and how I align with the business, both from a financial standpoint, a technical standpoint, a business standpoint, a driver's standpoint. I have to align more effectively with that than I do by going out and buying new toys. And sometimes it is, the reality is like, okay, as much as we want to do certain things, we just can't. So there's a level of reality and to some degree pessimism that comes into that as well. I do think, unfortunately, that attending some of the major conferences, and I will pick on the USA ones very much so, having now done quite a number of them outside of this country, having done a couple of the major conferences in this country, the bro culture and the games and the video games and the fishing for money shit and all of that does not bring a level of realism to what we are actually trying to do. It's a lot of bullshit, and unfortunately that carries through. So there's a lot of us, again, that walk around and going, really? This is what our industry has come down to? Basically a bunch of gamesmanship and bullshit one-upsments, as opposed to actually focusing on fixing shit. And I think the other reality, the bigger one is at the moment, is we're not winning. We're absolutely not winning. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It doesn't matter what anybody's saying at the moment, we're not winning. And now that we have added in the ability for both adversaries and also defenders to make a very, very effective use of artificial intelligence, we're going to be even more fucked, to be honest. We haven't been able to effectively educate the population that we're meant to protect on how to do the simple stuff when we tell them. Now you can build a bot that looks like me, sounds like me, and probably could be as effective, if not more so than I am. And it'll tell you to do something completely different. And unfortunately, people are going to believe it because we haven't done a good enough job of getting people to think for themselves. So we're not winning, and it's going to get worse.
Okay, well, that's reeks of pessimism.
Yes,
yeah. It does. Danny, are you back? You're back.
I think so. I'm really aggravated, but hopefully this is going to work out. Sorry about that, folks. Then thank you, Maria, for covering the base there. How do you handle all that pessimism and all the kind of turmoil and as a seller trying to persuade buyers and trying to work with them to maintain progress and move forward?
The same way I do with anybody in my life that's pessimistic, I think. And I've got family members I could name, and I know you know who I'm talking about, Danny, but like there's just within your life, you got to learn the soft skills of being able to navigate people's attitudes. Hell, I can be pessimistic on a given day. I can be in the worst mood and I'm going to say no to everything because I'm crabby. But like, for example, I've had situations, let's just say with Chris. Chris was having a bad day one day and Newspire sent him 3 calendar invites because the machine was broken, and he texted me and I was like, hold on, let me explain what's happening to this human that's trying to figure this out right now, and kind of explained how that worked and just hit him at a personal level and a human level, right? Like, this is what's happening. Or I also think I think it's important when you're going navigating the sales process, if you've earned trust from the person you're talking to, which again, you have to do that very early on. If you've earned trust, you actually are able to get to a point and just say, like, if somebody's being really like, why are you talking to me then? If everything, we have gone this far and now you're saying, no, 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 no. What, are you having a bad day? Do we need to talk about this tomorrow? How can I help you?
Like, yeah.
And that's really, you know, the fact. I also think though, to the point of where the buying behavior has shifted, I don't see so much of that pessimism anymore because people don't answer the phone as often. If they don't want to talk to you, they're not going to talk to you. So you can avoid a lot of that pessimism because by the time they get to me as an account executive, there's something that they want to talk about with me. They know what they're trying to solve for, and they're trying to actively see if it's something I can solve for them. And they can still be you get on those initial calls and they're really close to the chest. They don't really tell you what their problem is and they just want you to spray and pray. And you have to do that sometimes. That's what I would say is a pessimistic approach to this kind of thing nowadays. But if you, again, are credible, you know your shit, you don't need to have 40 people on the call with you for that initial conversation and you earn trust quickly, then the pessimism is you can navigate it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, let me add something to that one, especially with when you and I started talking. And I'll go back on that one. I'll also go back, I think, to a couple of other, business relationship things. To your point, nothing's ever going to go right. Not 100% of the time. It just doesn't happen. That's reality. That's not even pessimism. That's reality.
Fact.
Knowing that, walking in, having that conversation, and knowing that when it goes wrong, that the company, the person, the relationship side of it, that person's going to be walking right next to you. That person's going to bring the right one or two key people that can solve the problem or work with you through the problem to the table quickly, effectively, and efficiently that there is honestly where it's won and lost.
What's the best way to tap into what is the problem?
Communication for me, it's all about communication. I mean, that's, you know, it's ironically enough, it all comes down to the same stuff. I am a perfect example is, you know, I'm from an outreach message going, hey, I've got this new product. Well, that's nice for you. First and foremost, you haven't taken time to understand whether I even need the bloody thing or whether I'd even be interested. You just pitch me straight away rather than just asking, hey, how's the day going? How's your cup of tea or anything along those lines? So treat me like a human and there's a chance I'll treat you back like a human, first and foremost. I think secondly, it's that understanding. What to Maria's thing is, what problem are you trying to solve? You know, we're here talking, what are you trying to do? And then Maria's got to be honest and go, well, we can either help you or, hey, I can't help you, but I know a person. Yeah, or I can't. And maybe I know somebody who can, or, you know, good luck on the hunt. I'll send you more tea if I need to, kind of thing. But it's all about communication. And honestly, a lot of it, the CISO's got to look in the mirror as well. And security practitioners have got to look in the mirror and be more willing to communicate.
I think there's like approaches you can take too, though, because as a seller, you get stuck in these positions of trying to find what the pain point is. And it's borderline frustrating and sometimes a little bit ridiculous for everybody involved, because that can be a big waste of everybody's time.
Yeah.
And so I've really started in the last probably, I think, Chris, I asked you this like a year and a half ago. Well, do you think this would work? And you were like, it's funny, but yeah, maybe. And I said, so I get on a call with somebody. And so I can quickly figure out, is this somebody we call them in sales a C-more? They just take calls to see what else, C-more, what's out there. They're not a buyer. They can't make decisions. They're not actively looking, but they take vendor calls. I just say, are you just trying to learn about NewSpire? Or do you have an actual problem you think I can solve? Just so I know how to get you information in the 30 minutes that we have today. And then that usually gets me right to the, I have a C-more. I have somebody that's maybe on the fence, or this guy is just going to unload because I was direct and to the point very quickly. And I found that to be wildly effective. And when you're in sales, losing early is just as rewarding as closing a deal, because you're not wasting your time, your potential prospect's time, and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, it was to that point. I remember a couple of times running a couple of the companies, and, you know, we would do these bloody dinners every now and again. And I remember a few times sitting at the table and almost being aggrieved at some of the people opposite, because, you know, we're picking up the tab for the whole thing or half it or whatever. And you've got a bunch of folks who have either A, got no fucking intentions of buying no matter what, or B, aren't even the right person to be sitting at the table for doing all of this. So, you know, there's a value to your point. It's a value on time and resources. If you're out for several thousand for a dinner, and you ended up with some Muppet who was just there just to eat the dinner and the steak, and that pisses me off. And that's why I have no tolerance for any of that stuff.
I don't mind events. So I think I take a different approach in the events that I try to put on. And I think NewSpire, my company, does a good job of trying to build a community, not so much do the steak dinner with buyers thing. But I also will say I have no problem. I have a bunch of folks, and Denver's a great example. I have a bunch of folks in Denver that always come to my events. They endorse my events. They can't buy from me. They don't need what I have. And I have no problem involving them in the community, because not only do they support me as Maria, but they're always willing to blast, hey, NewSpire is really good. You guys should come check out what they're building in Denver. And that's a little bit different. But the folks that are just coming blindly to a steak dinner.
I think that I have no problem. It's like the watch event that we did. That was pretty cool. I mean, and there was nothing, and that was just like, come along. That to me was a good community thing.
Yes.
But there's definitely times, I remember doing booth duty quite a number of times, especially when it was one of my earlier companies. I remember having swag out there, and people will come by and they'd be like, well, I'm just going to take swag. I'm like, fuck off. I'm like, I paid for that. That came out of my pocket. I'm like, I want something in return. Yeah, you want to take all this? Because that's what they're doing. They just go around picking up shit. I'm like, fuck off. I want a conversation in return. You want a packet of mints? I want a conversation. I was a little draconian, shall we say.
Like, sidebar, my daughter thinks that a trade show is called a trade show because all people do is go around and take stuff off each other's tables. They're just trading stuff. That's what she said.
Yeah. No, and that's, I
especially having to write the checks out for that stuff.
Yeah.
It's a new, to me, it's an appreciation. You know, okay, if I'm expensing it, it's one thing, but if it's, I'm writing the fucking check for that. And to me, it's very much one of those, it's like, hey, you know, there's give and take on this one. And again, communication, collaboration, all the soft skills that unfortunately we seem to have forgotten a lot of.
All right, yeah, I want to shift the conversation a little bit.
Yes, sorry.
Sorry. No.
I'm
sorry,
go.
You were
go.
Okay. Yeah, we're still figuring out the triumvirate of awesome here and navigating the conversation between three, but we're doing a great job. I love this. So I love the text that I got. I mean, I love it, but I'm also equally panicking for you, Maria. I mean, it's nice to read the threads in the text messages because, like, okay, well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it live. So if you don't mind, I'd like to bring it up. You had mentioned, yeah, okay, we're in Q4 wrapping up the year, but we got to take a look forward what we have in the pipeline for Q1 and Q2. And we're just a little bit panicky about what's going on and what's happening for Q1 and Q2. So tell me a little bit about what's going on there. And then, you know, I'd like to know, like, what your initial steps are to assess and address that specific.
Yeah, well, I think when you're a seller, it's rinse and repeat. So you could have a brilliant quarter, and it doesn't matter that you had a brilliant quarter last quarter because the next quarter is here. So it's just back to zero is what we call it. And so I was sick yesterday and I canceled a lot of my phone calls because my voice was really bad. And I was doing planning for Q1 and Q2 and thinking, God, this doesn't look ideal for me just this second, but it's not terrible. But I think any good seller that is motivated and driven to succeed at the beginning of the end of the quarter, you all should be frantic because you're trying to build what you need to do for the next quarter. So you should be looking ahead. And if you don't get a little bit frantic, I don't know how you need to have like frantic and it's like frantic motivation. I don't know how to describe it, but that's me. But then I look at it and I just start thinking about I kind of base it like this. What's within my control? What can I immediately affect change on in terms of this pipeline? And let's go target that. I look at my accounts and I go through and say, who haven't I talked to or who have I not touched base with? Do I need to get in touch with these people to see what their budget looks like? Did I miss anybody in my book of business I already have? Because let's face it, it's a lot easier for me to go ask a current client that I have a ton of rapport with, hey, what are we doing for security? I just want to make sure we didn't miss anything in Q3 when we talked about it or whatever. I just want to make sure nothing's changed for Q1, Q2. Tell me that, right? So you do that first. That's what I do. The second thing I do is I call my friendlies that I know go on the road, because a lot of what this job entails is getting out to these shows, getting out to events, getting out to conferences, engaging with the community. And I find out where everybody is going to be. Because if I'm going to be traveling and be away from my family, I want to be with people that I trust. I want to be with people that are going to help support me. And I want to be, ideally, if you're in sales, you want to be where your customers are at, because if your customers are already there, there's a good chance other potential customers are going to be there, and start planning out kind of the event map for the next two quarters. So you can start the process of requesting funding and all that kind of stuff. And then the other thing I think people, could do a better job of doing, I know I'm trying to figure it out, is leveraging these social platforms and your target ICP demographic from your CRM and mash the two together to figure out where is the content or engagement that you're posting getting the most traction. Thank you, Danny. And then look at your ICP client base, where you have the most references, and then figure out a plan for where you're going to build targeted outreach strategies. Pick five strong areas of the country or your territory or whatever it is for your organization and go after it that way. So I did a lot of that. Yesterday I felt better this morning, not only because I had amoxicillin, but because I feel like I have a plan. But I think if you don't have a plan and you're not bouncing that plan off of different peers, including your buyers, Q1 and Q2 can be stressful.
You just laid out the buying plan for everybody. No. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be
we'll see.
I want to, so before I kick it off to you, Chris, to ask a little bit of what you think about that. How do you define, I ask a lot of marketers this, but I don't ask a lot of salespeople this. How do you define an ICP?
Yeah, because actually, what the heck is an ICP?
Sorry.
Ideal customer profile.
Yep.
Got it. Thank you.
Sorry. You should know better.
No, don't apologize. It's you know, we use them on a daily, right? We use that term on a daily, or that acronym on a daily. I can't hear ICP without thinking clown. Sorry.
I saw the tour bus at a Taco Bell once.
You did what?
I saw the Insane Clown Posse. That's a band.
Oh my gosh. Okay,
that's, do you remember them?
What the hell?
I saw them at a Taco Bell. I saw their tour bus at a Taco Bell one time, and I was like, oh my God, that's crazy.
I saw that comment. I'm like, what on earth are they talking about? I mean, I'm sitting there and I was like, this is going over my head. It's like me talking acronyms. I'm like, I'm lost.
All right. How were you asking me or Chris about the ICP?
No, you, Maria.
Well, there's the one that for Newsfire anyways, it comes from the top down. So it's like, where are we doing well? Who are we trying to target? Where is that? Where are we doing well and where are we trying to go? So there's strategy level conversations that are above my pay grade that I tend to nose my way into sometimes, unfortunately. But essentially it's looking at different things like demographic. It's looking at size of company. I know that I don't fit well with 800-pound gorillas. I do really well in mid-market organizations. So I know that's where I like to play. I know certain industries, we have a stronger history with, like manufacturing. We have a really strong story and narrative around manufacturing. So I like to target mid-market manufacturers. Looking at regions, so looking at areas where I know I have a better brand presence. I'm not a huge company, but I do have very solid brand awareness in certain areas of the country. And that's kind of how I define it.
Amazing. That's super helpful, by the way, Maria, for a lot of folks who are trying to figure it out. It's theoretical, but you nailed it. Chris, what's your advice for sellers and marketers as well, the vendors who persuade you, leaning into Q1 and Q2? Like what should they be thinking about with regards to how you're navigating your journey and your priorities for
we're going through I went through planning, and obviously planning at the moment is kind of on hold to some degree, but let's just say I'm doing what I would normally do, which would be I would have done planning at this point in time. So budget planning would have been done, budgets would have been submitted for 2024, and at this point in time what I'm doing is for the most part probably just clearing up the end of 2023, trying to breathe a little bit, make sure everything's in good shape, get through the end of the year from a framework standpoint as good and as clear as we can be. So typically now it's like policies, controls, make sure those are where they need to be, start making, you know, continue to make sure everything is ready for the end of the year. Q1, Q2 is, well, Q1, let's face it, the first month of Q1 is typically a hangover from the holidays anyway. Because you've got everybody's coming back. So now we're back in this, you know, the weeks off of over the holidays. So you've got a week or two of everybody coming back and just kind of getting back into the swing of it. So January and February are planning months. And if you think about it, it's right, okay, we've hit the year. Budgets have either been approved or not, as the case may be, or budgets are approved. Therefore, now we have to start figuring out. And hopefully, as well as that budget, also has the timeline been approved, because it's no good. You're not going to buy everything in January and February. If you've got any bloody sense, you'll have planned out like, okay, let's just talk Maria stuff. So I've, you know, in January, we're like, okay, we're going to start to look at managed security services. We're going to start looking at all of our logging and monitoring. Great. What does that entail? So that kicks off. And then it's kicking off from a couple of ways. Internally, if I'm doing it properly, I've got to look at what I have, what I need, where I want to go, who in the business needs to be involved in this, because it's not just a security conversation. And then you start doing that. So that's, you know, January and February taken up. Then it's the case of like, okay, who can do this for us? And, you know, to Maria's point, I'm typically doing that over either through people I already know, the network of people I already know on, you know, Tinkerer's group or here or somewhere like that, or at conferences. I'm going to wander around and see who's actually got something that looks like it would actually fit, and then start conversations from there. More often than not, though, stuff's planned out. I mean,
you know, if Maria hits me up in January and says, hey, let's talk about logging and monitoring, I might tell her to say, absolutely, I'm up for talking about it, but it's not, it's a Q2 or a Q3 project. So let's talk about it at this point in time. Because again, you limited amount of staff can't do everything all the time. So I think from a, if you know that I'm looking at something in 2024, now you just got to figure out when and what's the best point to talk. You know, it isn't trying to flood me with stuff now because it's going to get ignored.
Yeah, I love that. Sorry, I got to turn off the video because I don't like myself fuzzy. Anyway, that's about end of the year planning.
Danny, is the same. Danny, are you talking? Danny, are you talking to Maria or I on this one? We lost half of you again.
Oh, that's no fun. Can you hear me?
Not really.
All right. Well, we'll do our.
You know what? Danny, we're not getting it. It's. I'm not hearing it very well at all.
It's okay. We can have a dialogue while
she's figuring out the technology side of things.
All right, so you're talking about planning, you're talking about all of that kind of stuff, and true, I know, I think it's probably factual that most folks are leveraging your networks, you're leveraging shows, you're leveraging all that kind of stuff. But let's say, because this is what happened with NewSpire, I don't think you necessarily knew exactly who we were, but I had a really good SDR that had a conversation with you about hair, because he had purple mullet and you had a purple beard and it was a whole thing. Yeah. And he said, hey, if you're ever in the market for MSSP services, hit me up. And you said, funny, I am. Yeah. But that was done. Would the same effect have happened if it came from like a cold email rather than a platform everyone knows you use pretty regularly? Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, absolutely makes sense. Yeah, in other words, the approach. Probably not, no. It probably wouldn't have. So, I mean, I think that's part of the issue and part of the challenge is, you know, everybody's different. I mean, this is, you know, I leverage my network. I leverage LinkedIn pretty effectively. I've got the Tinkerers group to rely on. I do go to a number of the conferences. So I tend to have those conversations proactively rather than just wait for emails to come in. Now, that's not to say occasionally an email comes in where I'm like, huh, okay, we actually want to have a conversation about this, and maybe it's worthwhile doing, but those are rare. I mean, you know, probably this year so far, I think it's been one of those where maybe two or three times in the entire year has an email landed in the inbox or the spam box that I've actually wanted to take action on. Everything else has been relationships or people I know, or actually in some cases, me reaching out. There's been a couple of times I've just reached straight out to the company. Again, because of LinkedIn, I'll go hit the company up and I'm like, hey, who can I have a conversation with about this? And they'll reroute me to somebody and off we go from there. There was a good question in here.
Yeah.
Matt.
I was just going to read it.
Yeah. It's a fantastic question.
How much weight do you put behind? So Matt asked how much weight, in addition to network, the recommendations of his network, how much weight do you put behind Gartner or Forrester reviews when exploring solutions?
Very truthfully, very little. And I think it's because the way... And then this isn't to rubbish them, because there is definitely some value, but I don't put much stent in the magic quadrant. It is useful if I'm looking at a tier one provider and they are part of that Forrester, Gartner ecosphere, we'll call it. I'll try to be nice about it. If they're part of the ecosphere, then it maybe is useful to take a look and see what's going on. But again, to me, nothing beats picking up the bloody telephone and having a conversation with somebody or talking to a peer. I mean, you it is rare I recommend something, and when I do, obviously my reputation's at it. So if somebody brings something in and it's like, oh, Yvay, what the heck did you recommend that for? Well, that hurts. Whereas typically if I've had good experiences, I'll recommend something to somebody, or I'll recommend that person go talk to whoever it is. So there's a lot to be said for a personal recommendation. So I tend to look at that more than I look at anything else. Or I'll just pick up the bloody telephone, or I'll shoot a message to somebody that I know, or I'll find on LinkedIn and go, hey, can we have a conversation about this? So I do my own research. That was the nice thing with Victoria and Kalidi. I mean, they had a really, really nice way of doing that stuff. And I think there was that other company we ran into up in Gurkhan that does something similar. And I, you know, and again, it would be nice to have an independent, and we're talking independent, we're not talking, you know, a VAR type thing. I want somebody truly independent that I can go to and say, hey, look, I'm looking at endpoint, you know, I have this in place at the moment, tell me who's out there. And it isn't just the normal protagonists. Give me some of those weird ones, give me some of those that are up and coming, give me some of those that aren't even maybe US based, give me something that I haven't heard of. So I think that's a lot of it. And you won't typically find much of that on Gartner or Forrester, unfortunately. Gartner or Forrester will work with those that are recognized or in areas. I mean, perfect example, like, is, you know, if I'm starting to really, really heavily look at how to leverage, you know, not just actual artificial intelligence, but the adversarial side of it, I'm going to have to do my own damn research on who is out there doing the adversarial and the anti stuff. I'm going to get that from Gartner or Forrester, let's face it.
Well, and I think I'm being biased here, but I'm not a 4,000 person MSSP that has $1 million to pay to get on the Magic Quadrant. So we're not going to be on it for the foreseeable future.
And that's where I have a problem, the pay to play, because that's, to me, that's the same thing with the VAR. I have a problem with not all of them, but quite a number of the VARs, which is if I come to them and say, hey, look, you know, I need an endpoint. Well, unfortunately, in some cases, it's who's going to give us the biggest profit margin, or who's going to give us the best back end deal. And in other cases, it's, well, we bought 4 million seats of this, we probably should sell them this one, as opposed to maybe who is looking at my best interests.
Right.
So I think that's where I have a bit of a challenge with the whole thing, is, again, that's why I want the independent stuff. But it really doesn't exist, because the business model for it is rough, let's face it.
Well, yeah, as we, poor Vika, we learned. That's,
yeah, punk. Exactly. Yeah.
We have another good question. So talking about relationships, is there value if a, I can't see who this is, LinkedIn user is asking, is there value if a rep or a vendor says, hey, here's some of my customers for you to call for references. And it's something that's done all the time in government to government sales, this person is saying, but not sure if that translates into the private sector.
It does to some degree. It has its uses, no two ways about it. But I think it's got to be far enough down the process. Like, I absolutely hate, I like abject hatred for those inbound emails that go, hey, you know, I'm with Fred Blogs Incorporated and, you know, Apple and Coca-Cola and all these companies use us. And so therefore you should too, you know, the flavor on that. And I'm like, well, asshole, you've now just given away, you know, you've given away who your customer base is. You now give me a potential attack vector if I find a vulnerability in your stuff. You have given away open source intelligence information. And to me, as far as I'm concerned, whether the customer said that you could actually use their fucking name or not, is you've done away with the trust. I hate that. I have absolute hatred for that stuff, because, again, I don't want to be on the other end of it. I don't want somebody to go, hey, we just sold into Chris Roberts. Fucking congratulations. And now we're going to go tell the entire world that we did it. I'm like, you assholes. Cause
oh, my God, you would kill me.
Oh, I mean, but the flip side is when you hit me up and say, hey, look, we got such and such going on. I'm like, yeah, get them to give me a call or hit me up. I got no problem with that. That absolutely perfectly acceptable.
There's a time and a place and a respectable way to do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think the same thing. If you're having a conversation with a prospective client or customer, and that customer's somewhat on the fence, or they want to actually pick up the telephone and talk to another one, then, yeah, I don't, as long as, again, it's been cleared beforehand, I think it's perfectly acceptable to do that.
Looking, there was one more I saw that was really good before I get back to our regularly scheduled program. Georgie was asking, I have a question totally from a sales perspective. At the end of the year, as the end of the year is approaching, you've covered budget planning already. And when do budget planning, but what is interesting to me is current toolkit review happens. Oh, does it affect potential buying intents? And then I would tag on with that is, how often are you reviewing toolkit? Is it just as there's problems, or are you doing that yearly? What does that look like?
Oh, that's an interesting one. No, that's a really good question. I think it should be, let me rephrase this. It should be a continual thing. So a perfect example, let's just say, you know, when I turned up at Boom, I kind of took inventory on everything that we had. So let's say when there's a change of the guard, that should be one of those first things that absolutely happens. Because, you know, you sit there and you're looking, okay, I've got this endpoint, I've got this, I don't have this, I'm missing this, and this is crap, and I've got four of these. Well, what am I going to do first? First, I'm going to consolidate four into something usable. Then I'm going to take a look at where my gaps are. And then I'm going to start going, okay, what do I need to move the needle from a regulatory compliance, probability risk side of things? And off I go from there. Now, if my team comes to me and says, hey, we need a new security, you know, we need a new set of logging systems, I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to go, well, hang on, let's take a look at this one. You know, we have, you know, the new Spy solution, then we have the Sumo Logic stuff that we put everything else in. Why do we need a third? And why can't we use one? And then if they turn and say, well, we can't use Sumo because of A, B, and C, then that conversation has to be, well, do we even maintain Sumo? Because at that point, I don't need three logging. You should be having those conversations. And it's not just, again, it's not just security. It's going to be with the business and with everybody else. But those should be happening every single time you kick off like a project. Like in, you know, 2024, if we start looking at email and DNS stuff, then I'm going to look and go, what do we have? What's in place? What is going to be more effective? In other words, where's my current state? Where am I going to get to? Where do I want to get to? And if there's a big enough delta there, then great, we go buy something. But it also might be a case of like, okay, let's look at what we have and ditch it and buy something as well. So, because a lot of times from a budget standpoint, you are trying to consolidate. I don't want to have to keep going for money if I can actually save some money somewhere else.
When you're going through that process of thinking about, here's my current state and here is, yes, Danny, we've got you covered. Her internet is getting worse. So you said you do this process, or you should be doing this process, where you're looking at current state and you're looking at future state. When you are defining future state, are you defining technical feeds and speeds or outcomes or a combination of both?
Typically.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. First and foremost, it's outcomes. So yeah, first and foremost, it's absolutely outcomes. So outcome for me would be the ability to reduce. So risk is risk. So it's probability at that point in time. You know, risk is either there is a risk or there isn't, the probability of that risk occurring. So my job is to reduce the probability of a risk occurring and increase our capability to recover when something does. So there's your risk outcome. So my outcome is make us more resilient. So how do I make us more resilient? Well, I do that by having better visibility, and I do that by having, you know, better backups and all these other things in place. So there's my outcome. Absolutely nothing to do with technology at this first part and point. This is all very business focused. And I'm not doing it in a vacuum. Again, I'm going back to the business and going, and you know, my first question when I started at Boom literally was, how can I kill you? And because it's a question we need to ask, because if I know how I can take the company down and I know how to make the company fail, then I know what's core and what's key and what's critical to protect the organization, or to do the best I can to reduce the risks. You know, some financial companies, well, let's just take retail. I mean, retail, if they can't close the books for a week or 2 weeks, they're done. They're out of business. If you can't process transactions, if you can't manufacture something, you know, what's going to kill that business? And then now I know what I have to focus on as a core. Now, when I've done that, so the issues thing is like, do I already have something in place? If I do, is it good? Is it effective? And if I don't, or if it's not effective, am I ripping and replacing, or am I adding to the capability, or can I go back to the company and see what they have, or can I go see if there's something that will work with it? So, you know, if it does two of the functions, say endpoint, but I'm missing six, well, do I go by something that has everything, or do I do by something that has those six functions? And if I do, will those two play nicely together and all those other things? So that's when you start getting into that technical conversation.
Do you find, okay, and then also to his point though, what when you're looking at that, what do you do if you have duplicate functionality?
I mean, you got options. You either rip and replace, which is what we did. I mean, let's face it. I turned up. We had one endpoint solution that sucked, and it's a painful thing to have to do, to rip it out and then replace it with something that actually functions. So you either rip and replace, or if that's not possible, then you go, okay, what's my compensating control? Or what's my alternative? So let's perfect example. Let's just turn and say, we'll use that. I mean, we had carbon black in. It wasn't doing what it needed to do anywhere near as effectively. So I'm like, all right, do we rip and replace it with something that works? Or do I look at where carbon black fails and I bring in a better DNS solution? I bring in a better this. I bring in a better this. So now I've got one solution that kind of does what I wanted to do, but it's too painful to rip it out. And I've got three other things compensating. That's called technical debt, and that's not fun. It's not fun. But I mean, there are sometimes you almost have to do that. A perfect example would be, you think about it, some legacy systems. So certain legacy systems, you can't patch them, you can't fix them. It is what it is. So at that point in time, I can't rip and replace. I mean, because I just can't. It just isn't going to happen. What I can do is I have to build controls around it to have it more effective. So that's when you start looking at maybe networking technologies. You know, I can put in its own VLAN, I can put in its own segment. Then you have to maybe look at things on the wire. So now I maybe have to look at DLP, data leakage protection stuff, to see what data is moving, and all sorts of other packet sniffing, packet transactional type stuff. So if I can't fix that problem, do I build a solution around it? That is my least preferred way of doing it.
So then, tying this back to Georgie's question, when you do this analysis, you've got your roadmap of things you want to get to, but then you do this analysis each year and you find some things that need to maybe improve, change, or you want to do something differently.
Yeah.
How does that then adjust your buying behavior for the next coming calendar year? How do you insert that in?
I mean, that's a
project. Georgie, I think I'm asking the question right, Georgie.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be built into a project. I mean, it's so, you know, if I'm putting a new endpoint solution in place, that's, let's just say it's a 3 to 6 month project. If I'm having to do a rip and replace, more than now, it's a 12 month project. And so you just have to plan accordingly. And I think that's unfortunately the way you're going to look at it. But you've got to go in with your eyes wide open. You can't just go running in and hoping for the best. I think that's it. It's planning. It's just doing the planning first and realizing what the extent of what you're going to do is.
Okay. I think that answered the question. Thank you, Chris. I think we have time for one more, and I like this one, Logan. Do you find when vendors focus the conversations around outcomes and risk versus strictly through the security lens, there's a benefit to that? I have my thoughts as a seller on this, but
yeah, I'm going to probably say no, because everybody, unfortunately, in most cases, the conversation is we can protect you, we can solve all of your problems. And the reality is you can't. So I think I would rather make my own informed decision as to where I think you can help me. So for me, like the risks and the probability side of it comes into, I look at it through like the NIST cybersecurity framework lens, or DoD 800-171. I look at going, okay, if I'm going to bring in, let's just say the logging solution, if I'm bringing a logging solution, where on that entire set of streams of CSF and 800-171, where do I basically score points? Where do I help basically reduce probability? Where do I increase where do I increase my maturity score? So I look at it and go, hey, I'm going to increase in, you know, protect, detect, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to increase in here. Great. Well, hang on. If I do something else, what does that do? If I don't do logging and I lock the front doors, you know, will that increase those scores? So now where am I going to focus? So there's definitely some conversations around, when do I do things? How do I do things? But also, how does it help the organization as a whole basically become more mature and reduce probabilities of issues?
So yeah. I would add to that too, though, Logan, to your question, I know how I do things, and I tend to, again, try and focus on what the outcome is that my buyer's trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And I align what I can do to show them how what I do meets their desired outcome. And then I start bringing in the technical folks to talk feeds and speeds and all that kind of stuff. But I think most times the initial conversations stem around the business and the desired outcomes and what they're trying to solve for and how I could do that. If I can speak articulately enough to that, which I clearly cannot today, I didn't have coffee, Then I'm going to be granted the opportunity to bring in the technical folks to speak more to the NIST 800 and all that kind of stuff, that level of granularity. But you have to start there, I think.
I think the other thing that keeps that maybe gets missed in a lot of these conversations is, as a security practitioner, I have a day job, as does my entire team. I do for now. You know, as does the entire team. So when you look at these projects, and again, this is where the vendor comes and goes, oh yeah, we can implement that inside a couple of weeks. Well, that's great, but my team's got work to do. And so that couple of weeks now has to be extrapolated over more time, or their job functions or what they're actually doing as their day job is gonna have to be changed or modified. So I think that's the other thing where we have to be good at determining that ourselves. And I think that's a lot of the CISOs aren't as good at that. And a lot of them aren't, just aren't as good as planners as they need to be. And I think that's part of the problem as well.
I just went through a buying process with an old friend of mine who is a meticulous planner. Like this person plans better than anybody I've ever met. And I've gone through it with him now 3 times. So I know the package he needs for me to be successful. And one of the slides isn't a timeline or a milestone slide or anything like that for a project plan for us to get implemented. It's an estimated, what types of resources do you need for my team?
Yeah.
And what is the estimated amount of hours that you're going to need that person or that team for? And he has me break it down by each. And I'm like, I love that. I stole it and I use it for all of my stuff now, because that is such a more conducive way to do it, because me giving you a timeline is based on my timeline, not yours.
Exactly. And that to me is a perfect way of putting it. And I think too many people on both sides of the process forget that one.
Yep. Totally agree. Yeah. Well, I think we have time for one more question.
Let's understand the rip and replace is never an easy discussion. Absolutely. I think it's also, I mean, that's a, you know, it's also one of those things where I think that's something that the sellers and the vendors need to understand more and more these days, is so many organizations are not just going to go out and buy another shiny toy. So many of them are really, really looking to consolidate, are really, really looking to add value, and are looking at that, hey, I got 6 things that are meant to do this for me, and I want to get it down to 4. And by the way, I want to save some money. You know, because again, reality sucks. I mean, you know, the last couple of years have sucked. The 2023 has been a rough one, but 20 and 2021 and 22, everybody was out making hay and all that good silliness. And now reality's come in and everybody's like, whoa, where did my budget go? What's happening with things? And I don't need to go buy new more toys. What I need to do is look at what I have. And how do I make it more effective? And if that means spending money, absolutely. But do you spend wisely?
Yeah. Any parting thoughts, Mr. Roberts? Thank you, audience, for the great questions and for your patience with Danny's internet. We're going to fix that for next week. Don't worry.
Yeah, Chris, we need to get together offline on Wednesday and figure this one out. No, I think it's, you know, somebody said it in a post, which is very, very true. And once again, it comes down to the human factor. It comes down to communication. It comes down to a partnership. I mean, it's, you know, you and I are probably a good example of that one. This is not a typical transactional relationship in any way, state, or form. So I think I like that. And I think that's where more CISOs need to be open to that, to having those conversations and realizing this. And I think also from a vendor partner standpoint, they've got to realize, I'm not going to buy something and hand the keys to my company over on a single fucking inbound email.
Yeah. I think on my side, I thought this was a good dialogue. It went a different direction than we thought it would, but it was good. And so 2 things, I think, going back to the pessimism thing, how we fix it is by continuing to show up here each week, having all you guys jump in to help Danny with conversation points and help us with questions so that we could keep the conversation going naturally. And just trying to take what we all discuss here and go out and affect change within our ecosystems, wherever we're at within our own organization. So thank you for coming, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks everybody. It was fantastic. And I think I actually like that parting comment on here as well, which is, more organizations need to be open to this. But again, it's not just sales. I will focus the mirror back on the leadership side of it, on the CISO side and our industry, and go, hey, we got to figure this shit out too. We can't continue to blame. Can we be realists? Yes. Are we still a little pessimistic? Absolutely. But we got to be open to change. So I love it.
Goes both ways. All right, guys, yeah. We'll see you next week. Danny, you can click the button. She can hear us still. See you next week, guys.
Take care, everybody. Is Danny clicking the button?
I don't know.